If I were a rich man, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. All day long I bidi-bidi-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a bitty-bitty-rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle-man, I'd build...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lee Shepherd, who is a lawyer who for 20 years has been a contributing editor at the influential provider of tax news and analysis, Tax Analysts. She covers all areas of tax law, including international taxation, corporate taxation, partnership taxation, bankruptcy, tax, pensions, and tax accounting. She just published your Mitt Romney Tax Issues Cheat Sheet. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lee Shepherd.
Hi.
And Lee, you've done a fairly comprehensive and serious piece of analysis here of all of the aspects of Mitt Romney's tax issues. Of course, they're extremely opaque because the candidate himself refuses to release anything but 1 year's tax returns and a partial estimate for 2011. It seems to me that the only fair analysis of Mitt Romney's refusal to take part in a tradition of presidential candidates that, after all, was started by his own father back in 1968, to release many, many years of tax returns. The only explanation could be either, one, that he's hiding something, or two, that he's incredibly arrogant. What would your analysis be to explain his reluctance to reveal his taxes?
Well, we have all kinds of theories about what he might be hiding, but we can't, you know, we can't really get any of them crystallized. But there's also, you know, the arrogance factor here can't be discounted, you know, because, it is, and that is part of the point of the article, is some of this is just unbecoming in a presidential candidate.
Well, I suppose to the extent that as commander-in-chief and chief executive of the United States, his job in part, surely, would be to run, let's say he's CEO of the USA Incorporated. Wouldn't his job be to take care of revenues as a businessman?
And he would be the president, and the president is the head of the executive branch, and all of the administrative agencies are ultimately answerable to him, and the IRS is actually the most important administrative agency, and the commissioner of the IRS is a presidential appointee. And he, you know, as the executive, that's what it means. It means you're responsible for executing the laws, enforcing the tax law.
And presumably, if you're trying to balance your budgets and run a government like you run a business, assuming that that is that we're going to have, if he were to be elected, he'd be kind of a manager of the United States. And in many ways, that is how he's presented himself. I'm the businessman who can fix this country. But the point I'm trying to make, surely, Lee Shepherd, is that wouldn't he want to have revenues?
Yes, he would. And, you know, we have had in the past couple of decades some real questions about our level of tax enforcement, that we've had insufficient tax enforcement, and we have just ran another article in our publication Tax Notes talking about how there is insufficient tax enforcement against big partnerships and against managers of those partnerships like Mr. Romney. I mean, people like that are not, and their big giant partnerships are not being audited adequately.
I understand this has been going on for some time, has it not?
It has been going on for some time, and it is almost not really a Republican or Democratic thing. I mean, it does make a person kind of wonder whether we've become Italy and just sort of decided that we just don't feel like enforcing our own tax laws.
Well, let's talk about one aspect, and I did speak with a couple of tax experts about Mitt Romney's taxes, or at least as much as one can speculate about them. And one of the experts I spoke to was head of tax compliance of the Joint Committee of Taxation in the U.S. Congress, Ed Kleinbart.
Yes.
You probably know him, right?
Yes, I do.
And he's troubled by the release of only 2010 and a partial for 2011 on the part of Mitt Romney, and was speculating that maybe the reason why he doesn't want to release the rest of his tax returns, or even some of his other tax returns, is that in 2009 the IRS offered up an amnesty for those who had parked their money abroad. And there hadn't been any compliance under the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act, as you've written in your article, Alicia, you know, that the FBARs were routinely ignored. But then when there was a scandal over the Swiss bank having so many U.S. accounts, the IRS offered up this amnesty, and 35,000 wealthy Americans who'd been hiding their money abroad took part in this amnesty. And there's some speculation that perhaps Romney is one of those 35,000. What's your hunch on this?
I'm not going to speculate on the amnesty part. He did have a UBS account, and you know, some of these dates match up. We know a lot of people didn't file their F-bars, and a lot of people did file their F-bars. So I can't speculate about any of that without more information.
Well, but let's talk about what you've said in your article about FBARs, and what, so that the public understands what they are. And
they are a report that you make to FinCEN, which is a different part of the Treasury than the IRS. And in the years during which the Romneys had the UBS account, the penalties, financial penalties for not filing FBARs, were very tiny. And this was an obligation that was routinely ignored.
So the coincidence here is that there was this amnesty in 2009, and so many people took advantage of it. That's what's led to the speculation, right?
Yes.
So what we do know, and what you've also written about in your article, Lee Shepherd, your Mitt Romney Tax Issues Cheat Sheet, is this mysterious 100-plus million in assets in an IRA that are capped at, what, 20,000 or something?
What is capped at 20,000?
I thought the IRAs were capped.
IRAs had, in the years that he was would have been putting money in that IRA, okay, there was a special kind of IRA for a self-employed person. And you had a $30,000 cap on contributions. Once the contribution went in, you know, it could grow to whatever. An IRA is a tax shelter of sorts. So the caps are on what you put in. And during the relevant years, okay, the cap was $30,000. But, you know, when we sort of measure the number of years he might have been contributing, I think it's about 14 years. And we say, well, if he, let's say he put in, you know, $30,000 a year or something, we don't know what, and it grew, you know, wouldn't it have to grow at an astronomical rate to get to $100 million or so?
So
that is what's led to the speculation about what sorts of things he might have, you know, put in this IRA. And so you see in the article, you see speculation about, well, did he put in profits interest, which you can value at zero under some circumstances, but which could be very valuable? Did he put in special shares of stock, which were given a very low value? And you might have discussed that issue with Ed Kleinbard.
Well, I guess you left, as a layperson, you left thinking, well, either this guy is an amazing financial genius to be able to run up that kind of an investment in an IRA tax shelter. So I suppose that what we're talking about here, Lee, is this kind of gray area between tax avoidance and tax compliance and the ability to pay minimum taxes. And that, of course, is what Mitt Romney more or less said to the American public. You know, I didn't pay a penny more than I had to. I imagine on the assumption that most Americans hate the IRS, and therefore that will win him points. But it's hard to believe that not complying with the presidential tradition, and after all, ironically, with Paul Ryan, he'll be requesting Ryan's former tax returns, won't he? Just as John McCain, when he was considering Romney, was provided with 23 years of Mitt Romney's taxes. So
he did already vet a bunch of Mr. Ryan's tax returns, and Mr. Ryan, when he went on television, said he wasn't going to say how many tax returns the Romney campaign had looked at, but then he also said that he will only release 2 years worth of tax returns. I mean, they're just sort of trying to force this on us as the standard. You know, you only get 2 years. Even though, you know, to those of us who are tax experts, you know, the more interesting returns are not just the ones in the 2000s when he held the Swiss bank account, but, you know, let's go back to the 90s when you were running the private equity fund. What were you doing?
Well, it's, again, you know, you're left with the speculation either that he's hiding something or that he's incredibly arrogant. Now, of course, we're learning in terms of Paul Ryan that he was in on some meetings when the economy was crashing in 2008 and did make a bunch of trades and sold all of his interests in a lot of the big Wall Street banks that went under or that suffered a bad hit and transferred all of the money from the sale of those stocks before the crash happened into Goldman Sachs.
I guess he's just an investment genius, isn't he?
They both are. This is a...
Yeah. Maybe they ought to just go run a big fund together.
So what is the story with the horse then? The idea, I think a lot of people were kind of shocked at the idea that a dressage horse was actually a business that you could deduct $77,000 in expenses?
Oh, horse. Okay. A show horse, this is a show horse, can be a business. Just like a racehorse could be a business. There's lots of people in the racehorse business. There are special rules for horses, and the courts are very harsh when you, you know, come in front of them and there's your horses and you say, oh, gee, Your Honor, I lost money and buckets of it year after year. There's a lot of problems with this sort of a horse becoming a business because you can't really make money at it. In this end of horsedom, there is not a lot of money. And this horse is a little old for breeding, which is one of the excuses, you know, rationales that was offered. They said, oh, well, she'll be bred when her show career is over. Well, she's 15 years old. And being a show horse is a strenuous activity, just like being an athlete is a strenuous activity. I would say that if they went into court with this, they would lose because the judge would say, look, you just don't have a reasonable expectation that this is going to be a profitable thing. What they were doing on the tax return was they were saying, well, the passive loss rules come into play because we were looking at the Romney's tax return. The Romneys are just part owners of this horse, but Ann Romney is paying 2/3 of this horse's expenses, which is about $120,000 a year, the total expenses for basically keeping this horse and shipping her around to shows. And they were trying to say, well, Mrs. Romney is a passive participant in a business. They weren't trying to currently deduct the $77,000. But this activity would have to be a business for them to hang on to that number and someday set it off against the sale of the horse or Mrs. Romney selling her interest in that partnership. And, you know, one plausible, you know, way out of this thing might be that because the horse is now famous, even though the horse didn't do particularly well in the Olympics, you know, maybe some other horse person would come along and pay $1 million for her. In which case, the Romneys could use the $77,000 to offset against the gain on the sale.
I see. So Romney has not been audited, and apparently this is very common with these very wealthy people.
It's sadly extremely common that, and it's a bone we have been picking for years at Tax Analysts, because if you want people to pay taxes at that end of the spectrum where they're not, you know, they're not getting wages that are withheld on, okay? They're not getting wages at all. So they and their accountants put things on tax returns, and if they're not audited, there's nobody checking this. You do need auditing, a lot of auditing, and compliance at the top. And one reason you need that is because you want the people who are having their wages withheld to believe that the tax system is fair. That's very important as a matter of civics.
Well, but it clearly is not fair. At least something is wrong in this country if we have the greatest and growing disparity of wealth. For example, just one family, the Wharton family, the heirs to the Walmart fortune, own the wealth equivalent to the bottom 40% of all Americans. That's just one family.
Actually, the bottom 40%, the last statistic I saw was even worse, which was that the bottom 40% since the housing bubble blew up, the bottom 40% have pretty much nothing because they lost what equity they had in their houses. But yes, you're right. We've got wealth disparity that looks worse than Brazil, and there are a lot of causes of that. I mean, bank deregulation was a big cause of that. Letting hedge funds and private equity funds do whatever they want without any regulation was a big problem there. But also, you know, years and years and years of tax cuts at the top is a big enabler of that, too.
Well, but Lee Shepard, you just pointed out how the housing bubble bursting eviscerated the working Americans in the middle class, the lower 40%, have basically been busted down to nothing. Conversely, when the Romneys bought their tear-down La Jolla home in California, this beachfront home for $12 million in cash in 2008, just quoting from your article, because its value fell by 27% during the financial meltdown, they requested and got a county property tax reduction totaling $109,000 over 4 years. So there's an extraordinary contrast, isn't there? A wealthy person gets a huge break, and the average homeowner who lost the value in their home are living in their car.
Well, you're the one who's in California where, you know, you've got other property tax issues like your school financing issues and stuff like that. I mean, you know, the only thing you can say for that is that the Los Angeles Times did report that a lot of other people in San Diego requested property tax abatements and got them.
Well, just in closing, Lee Shepard, on Friday, Ann Romney is going to be appearing with Brian Williams of NBC. She's already recorded the interview, and apparently she said in the interview that they simply are not going to reveal any more than the taxes. That's all that we're going to get, the 2010 and the partial for 2011. So what do you think it will take? I mean, obviously Harry Reid tried a ploy that doesn't appear to have been effective. What will it take, do you think, to get Mitt Romney to release his taxes?
Another insider, you know, talking about what the problem might be, or, you know, a big publication like the Los Angeles Times, you know, confronting the campaign with it and getting them to acknowledge what the problem is. I mean, that's about all I can think of. I mean, back to your original point was about arrogance, and, you know, to me, you know, the Ann Romney interview is right on point on that, because, you know, she's the one who gets sent out to humanize things. You know, she's the one who's supposed to be the soft approach as far as campaign personnel are concerned. And, you know, she's out there saying, well, you know, here's take it or leave it.
Well, Lee Shepard, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Lee Shepard, who's a lawyer who for 20 years has been a contributing editor at the influential provider of tax news and analysis, Tax Analysts. She covers all areas of the tax law, including international taxation, corporate taxation, partnership taxation, bankruptcy tax, pensions, and tax accounting. She just published Your Mitt Romney's Tax Issues Cheat Sheet. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Michelle Manos. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.